The views and opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of Overseas Radio Network or broadcast partners. All information provided is for educational purposes only. Before taking action, consult a licensed professional.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
Yes, folks, it's that time of the week again. It's Columbia Calling. Coming up later with your host, Richard McCall, the Englishman here in Bogota, tomorrow in Mompos, up by the Caribbean coast. Anyway, this week's edition is particularly special because it really shows a strength of spirit and a young Scot's desire to change the way people think about travel and living standards in Colombia. We interviewed Tony Scott, one of a two-person team with his partner Kim McPhee, who've been in Colombia for 7 years, run a couple of hostels in Popayan, it's in the south near Cali. They've built their own off-grid house. They've started a bicycle sharing scheme. Frankly, I don't know when they actually ever calm down and take a rest. But anyway, it's a real pleasure to have these notable individuals on the show this afternoon. As always, we're talking about all things Colombia, all things Colombian. Don't miss it. Tune in to Columbia Calling. Thank you.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, your online radio resource about life abroad.
The U.S. government has spoken. It wants higher tax rates, capital controls to keep your money under their control, surveillance to spy on your every email. In short, the government wants to control every aspect of your life and make you their slave. As an internationally minded person, you know keeping everything you own in one country could be disastrous. But how do you get started? Announcing Passport to Freedom. In just 3 days, you'll learn how to escape high taxes and reduce or eliminate your tax burden. How to form an offshore corporation or trust. The best places to get a second passport. The best places to expatriate, and more. This 3-day event will reveal everything you need to know about keeping yourself and your assets safe. Tickets to this event in fabulous Las Vegas are extremely limited, so go to PassportOverseas.com. That's PassportOverseas.com. Seats are extremely limited, so register today and take advantage of a special 50% discount for overseas radio listeners. Don't miss this chance to see offshore and expat experts like Joel Nagel, Bobby Casey, Jake DeSillis, Pete Sisko, Andrew Henderson, and more. Go to OverseasPassport.com now and reserve your ticket before the government shuts this opportunity down.
From China's Great Wall to the Leaning Tower of Pisa, this is the Overseas Radio Network.
This is Columbia Calling. I'm your host, Richard McCall, and welcome back to another episode here. We've been running for 16 weeks, more or less, or exactly. I hope you enjoyed last week's interview with Kevin Howlett of Columbia Politics. It was quite a polemic, and we've had a little bit of feedback. If you ever want to get in touch, just drop me a line. You can find my website, which is www.richardmccall.com, and there's an information box there, how you can contact me. Anyway, so we're here, as always, to talk about all things Colombia, all things Colombian, and demyth some of the rumors and some of the lies propagated by the mainstream media out there about Colombia. Many of them have their base in reality and truth, but as always, we're here to offer a different perspective. And this week, in segments 2, 3, and 4, we'll be listening to an interview with, we'll be hosting an interview with Tony Clark. Tony Clark is a young Scot who came to live in Colombia more or less at the same time that I came here. That's in 2007. Tony came with his partner, Kim McPhee, and they run a couple of hostels in the south in Popayan. And they've now built their own off-grid home, and they have a bicycle sharing scheme. And that's not it. They are the brains behind HostelTrail.com. Look it up. If you want to backpack and if you want to travel through South and Central America, Hosteltrail.com was pretty much the first site set up to enable this. Now the big boys have followed them in, so I get to talk to Tony later on and ask him how it feels to have been, you know, at the vanguard of travel plans and travel planning for this region. I apologize in advance if there are any breakups in the interview, because he's way down there in Popayan and I'm up here in Bogota, and internet being what it is, with the companies creating all sorts of problems and raising their prices, is a little bit iffy at times. So I apologize in advance for that, but it will be a fascinating interview with Tony Clark later on in the show. What's going on in Colombia? Well, we continue to see political shuffling here and there. What's going on? You know, we'll have the elections next year, but not until late next year. But everybody's mobilizing. Uribe, the ex-president, Alvaro Uribe Vélez, is confirmed that he will be running for Senate. The big question on everybody's lips, well, if it wasn't on everybody's lips, it was on my lips, is if Alvaro Uribe runs for Senate and he's elected in, he's voted in, does he lose his presidential amnesty? And the answer is no, apparently not. So therefore, he's still secure of being fully investigated with regards to potential links to paramilitary groups, and therefore potential links and alleged links to basically what were nothing better than death squads back in the 1990s. Anyway, so that's what's going on there. We have Pacho Santos, Francisco Santos, who's the president's cousin, who was very likely going to run for president, and we'll see how he does that. And probably he'll be in this in the same party as Uribe. So there's all sorts of reports coming out on that. What else can we say? As always, the ongoing saga of the Colombian waters, or the Colombian claimed waters, or the Nicaraguan claimed Colombian waters around the islands of San Andres and Providencia continue to be strife. Continue to create strife for the government and for Colombia's foreign policy. Anyway, so we'll see what happens there. And of course, the Colombian government are very likely not to accept the ruling by The Hague in the International Justice Courts. So we'll see what knock-on effects and how that can make Colombia an international pariah by not obeying it. But I think you'll get most people here probably supporting the government in that. And the government will probably pander to this, because the government of Juan Manuel Santos really needs some populist support right now. So what better than a nationalist cause? So we'll see what comes of that in coming days. I myself will be heading off this week to Mompox, back up to my hotel, La Casa Amarilla, to check it out and make sure everything's running smoothly. And of course, the new house that I've been refurbing and redecorating, new colonial house there. Because at the beginning of October, there's a big jazz festival in Mompox. How much jazz is played is always suspect, but because we have the closing events, will be played by Chocky Town. Chocky Town, an Afro group from Quibdó in the Chocó. They sing about corruption, and some of their songs deal with corruption in the Chocó, and they've won all manner of Latin Grammys, I believe, and are incredibly popular. So they'll be playing in the plaza at the closing ceremony in front of my hotel, La Casa Amarilla. One other thing that we always raise, you know, we talk about travel quite a lot here on Colombia Calling here, and I know that I'll be able to raise the specter of TripAdvisor with Tony, because as he runs two hostels there in Popayan, he too lives at the mercy of TripAdvisor reviews, because we depend on them for our North American markets down here. It's one of those pages that, you know, it's a necessary evil. Anyway, yeah, I've seen it. He's had some recent poor reviews, and we've had for the Casa Maria, we had another false review come through. Why was it false? Well, it was the same person writing a review the second time and promoting another hotel in the review. But of course, TripAdvisor policy see that they've done nothing wrong, so it's still up there. So what do we do? Well, we just continue working and try and work around it. Unfortunately, it's the reality of travel nowadays, is that we can be plunged into negative press, let's say, negative publicity online if and when someone wishes to do so. You know, basically, we know that the people who did it are another hotel. So what are we going to do? Well, nothing. You know, what can you do? So anyway, Colombia. Yes, so we've got probably the recall of the votes to see if Mayor Gustavo Petro will stay in power or not coming up shortly as well. So you need to keep an eye out for that, because that's quite a significant situation, because of course Gustavo Petro, like him or loathe him, represents a success story from a former guerrilla getting into a position of, I mean, a serious political authority in Colombia. So I kind of hope that he's not sort of impeached. I think of that. That might be the word. I kind of hope he's not, but we'll see. Anyway, so this is all Colombia Calling, and stay tuned, because we've got Tony Clark on the line down in Popayan, and we'll be talking to him for the rest of the show, all about his projects and life in Colombia. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. Please don't go away.
OverseasRadio.com, broadcasting from Panama to Paris and beyond.
It is said that liberty is the only thing you cannot have unless you are willing to give it to others. Do you believe in and want to spread the message of liberty to a younger generation around the world? The Language of Liberty Institute does just that, with camps in developing countries such as Albania, Nigeria, Armenia, and Mozambique. If you want to learn more about this powerful and growing initiative, to sponsor, attend, or even become one of the teachers, visit our website at languageofliberty.org to learn more. You can subscribe to email updates or like our Facebook page to follow our activities.
Are you looking to invest, live, or retire overseas? Before you pack your bags, you need to log on to NagelLaw.com. It's the only stop you need to make for global business, asset protection, estate planning, overseas residency, and citizenship needs. Our experts have experience working in 41 countries around the world. Starting a business abroad can be overwhelming without expert help. We assist clients with foreign trust, foundations, corporations, LLCs, IBCs, and property acquisition. Need help with IRA assets abroad, capital formation, foreign securities issues, banking, brokerage, or finance needs? NagelLaw.com. We ensure compliance with U.S. tax and regulatory laws. We engineer global structures to help our clients achieve their personal business objectives. Get started today. To find out about our introductory personal asset protection plan, visit us online, NagelLaw.com. We represent capital overseas.
This tree was never chopped down, because this crutch never needed to be carved, because these legs never grew weak, because this child never got polio. Over the past 20 years, Rotary Club members have helped immunize over 2 billion children against polio. Now we are on the brink of eradicating this crippling disease once and for all. But we need your help. Thanks to an historic matching grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, every dollar Rotary raises will work twice as hard to make sure vaccines reach the people who need it, to protect the children of the world against polio forever. This is an opportunity to end polio now. Visit rotary.org/endpolio. Rotary, humanity in motion.
You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network, the exclusive online radio station for the expatriate community.
Va subiendo la corriente con chinchorro y atarraya.
And we're back. I'm Richard McCall, your host here on Colombia Calling on the Overseas Radio Network. Every week we interview someone interesting in the expat community here in Colombia. And this week we're pleased to have Scott Tony Clark on the show. Tony came to Colombia 7 years ago, more or less the same time that I arrived here, and is set up now very successfully in the southern city of Popayan, which is a colonial city south near to Cali, and he has a website sort of building company, the two hostels, a bike sharing scheme, and the first off-grid home in Colombia. Tony, welcome.
Hello, Richard. Thanks very much for having me on the show.
You're very welcome. That's a very impressive resume here in Colombia. And why Popayan?
I say it sounds more offensive than you say it, than I say it's just everyone has their place, really, don't they? And I was traveling for the best part of 9 months in Colombia, and arriving in Popayan, I just really felt at home. People gave me a warm welcome, and I was in impressed by the infrastructure, the beauty of the city itself. And I just said, you know what, I'm going to give it a go. I'm going to try and live here. The worst that can happen is that it doesn't work out. I have to go home. But thankfully, I'm now 6.5 years down the line, still here. So obviously something worked.
And of course, you're in a good situation because you, Tony, and your partner Kim, and you're both Scots, and you're supporting one another, obviously. But you must be accepted into the local community to be effective and to be a participant. They must have taken you under their wing and just embraced you into the Popayan society.
Well, I have to admit, it was really very easy, and a lot of the ease was due to the fact that people were so welcoming. I've always said, in the last few years, the foreigners who come to live in Colombia, especially in Popayan, have had it very easy. And a lot of the reason is because they haven't really seen many foreigners over the last few years. They don't know many foreigners, they've not really seen any tourists, especially here in the southern section of Colombia, which back in the days was an area that people just didn't come to. So I think at the point when I arrived, people were just very relaxed to see a foreigner. And that definitely made things very, very easy to start things up.
Yes. Now, listen, for those of you listening, the connection is not so great, but we're gonna struggle through and see how we can go with this, because we're a long way away, and even the connection in Bogota is pretty poor. So, now, Tony, you set up originally the Hostel Trail website. That's hosteltrail.com, which is a massive network of sort of like-minded entrepreneurs, and it was a site that 7 years ago, you saw a need for this site, the hosteltrail.com. There was no information about Colombia.
Well, that's right. 7 years ago, we were sitting in our flat in Edinburgh, planning on doing some kind of project here in South America. We realized the section of South America that was most impacted on the internet was the northern section, i.e. Venezuela and Colombia. And so we had been flying to Caracas and spent about 2 months traveling around Venezuela, building a network, connecting together offering tour companies, offering more information for travelers wanting to visit Venezuela. And then we moved into Colombia and did the same thing here. About 7 years ago, these were the days when we couldn't really find anything. There were guidebooks that wouldn't even include Colombia in their write-ups. It would just omit it altogether from the South America section. So, a lot of it was down to the fact that we saw an opportunity. We saw an app, and we knew that there was a section of South America that wasn't being covered.
Yeah. Now, the Hostel Trail website, at one point, as we've mentioned, we've spoken about in the past, but at one point was in the top 10 most visited websites in English in Colombia.
Well, that's right. In our glory days, it was a top 100 Colombian website, according to our last rank, and we were in the top 10 English language site of the country itself, and which we were very, very pleased about. And a lot of the amount of information that we had on the website for travelers, we were obviously doing very, very well on Google. And also a lot of it was the fact that our users and the actual users were constantly keeping the website up to date. And so obviously we saw that reflected in the rankings. Things have definitely a little bit now. I can't say we're in the top 100 anymore, but it was certainly a reflection that there was a need for that information out there. There was a one. People were desperately seeking information out of this country.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was because 7 years ago, as we say, as you mentioned, there were guidebooks would also omit Colombia. In fact, I'm reluctant to admit that at some point I updated a section on Colombia in a guidebook, which shall remain unnamed, and their section on Colombia extended to all of 26 pages. Can you imagine?
It's shocking. There's a nice little guidebook down here, well, in the hospital as evidence, because I'm sure in 20 years, we'll look back on it and say, I can't believe we were at a whole country would have been removed from a South American guidebook. But I think it's testament to how far Colombia has come in the last, well, probably the last decade, really, in terms of tourism, and really the potential it's got for the next 10, 20, 30 years to come.
Yeah, it's true. And also, I mean, you know, sites like yours, the hostiletrail.com website, which really opened it up and became accessible and showing people that Colombia could be visited. I mean, you paved the way for the, let's say that the hostel worlds, the trip advisors, the Expedias, who are not risk takers. These websites only go in with their mass support behind them when the destination is opened up. So, I mean, you paved the way.
Well, I mean, it's easy to say that, it's a convention. I suppose in a way we did. I mean, we were very fortunate in the fact that we were a two-man team, myself and Kim, and so we had very, very few outgoings, and all of our writers and all of our contributors were volunteers. So based on that, we were able to go into countries like Colombia and Venezuela where there wasn't really any money to be made from building a website, and just make a useful resource. And obviously now that the big players have arrived, your Expedias, your TripAdvisors and all that, this shows that these places and these people are starting to see the potential in the country. So I imagine that they'll just keep arriving. There'll be lots and lots of new websites and big companies now coming in and seeing potential in tourism and make the most out of a very little area in Colombia.
Yeah, so what we've got now is not Colombia being a specialist destination, but being a mainstream destination. It's still a specialist destination, but it's moving towards the mainstream. And so it's positive to all of us. And of course, you set up the Hostel Trail Hostel, which is of course the hostel by the same name as your website.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I've been on the road for about 9 months to Venezuela and Colombia, building the Hostel Trail website. And as I say, we arrived at the top around April 2007, and I'm just people building started up the Hostel Trail, which was the first kind of real backpacker hostel in the city. And so yeah, we've pretty much been offering a budget accommodation for the last 6 years. And 2 years ago, we took on another hostel, Hostel Caracol, and that's in style, but the Hostel Trail is a new building, only built in 2006, a three-story construction. The Caracol is a colonial building right in the historic centre of Popayán. And so we really have two different products, different styles of hostels, depending on the different traveller that comes to the city.
And it must be going well for you to now be running two establishments there in Popayán. I can only congratulate you on that. But of course, I'm well aware of the difficulties of maintaining and restoring a colonial building from my experience at Mompox.
What a nightmare! Yeah, I think we've had a conversation before about humidity in colonial buildings, and really, I mean, colonial buildings in your sense are fantastic to look at. But actually keeping these things maintained is just an absolute nightmare. It's just a constant battle.
Well,
so it's and I think you're having the same problem in Mompox, aren't you?
I mean, it just sucks the money away. I mean, and the income goes into restoration.
Exactly. You can see it in the walls. See your money in it. So.
Yeah, it's true, but it's an interesting thing. You know, some years ago, 8 or 9 years ago, I was very, very ill in Brazil, and I became an absolute expert of medical terms and my condition in Brazil. Now I find in Spanish, I can speak really, really fluently about colonial rooftops.
That's right. It's funny, isn't it? Well, I have an event cure for cancer, organizing an event cure for baldness or humidity.
Well, I think if we found some sort of cure for humidity, I mean, that would be it. That would be the ticket to success.
That's right. But the colonial roots, I can hear your statement those as well, because they're just as bad as walls. It's pretty much the whole package, of course, the walls and the roof. But apart from that, it's great when colonial building.
Yeah.
Well,
it's all one. But listen, we're talking to Tony Clark, who is an expert in the travel industry, and he's based in Popayán. Check out his website. That's www.hosteltrail.com, and also the hostel by the same name, and of course his other one. You can find the links. This is Colombia Calling. I'm your host, Richard McCall, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Con la luna, habla con
blah, blah.
Pack your bags and explore the world with us. You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network.
This is Jason Hartman, and I want to welcome you to the Jet Setter Show blogcast, an audio version of our written blog at jetsettershow.com. You can find the full-length podcast at jetsettershow.com or on iTunes, where we interview thought leaders and experts on exploring lifestyle-friendly destinations worldwide. Here is today's blogcast.
Thank you, Jason. For the jet-setting beach bum, a problem eventually arises. Where do you go in the world for a new beach fix after your travels have taken you to the usual sandy spots around the world? Well, that's an easy one. It's time to get experimental. Everyone and their brother has hit the tropical white sand beaches, encircled with swaying palm trees and turquoise water nibbling at the shore. Are you ready for one with a twist on the theme? Check out the resort complex San Alfonso del Mar in Algarabo, Chile, for the world's largest swimming pool. This one should definitely be added to your bucket travels list. What do you do when you are a world-renowned resort located smack dab on the Pacific coast in Chile? Normally, whoop for joy that you can charge top dollar for the proximity to the ocean. But this particular stretch of ocean offers 63-degree year-round temperatures, dangerous waves, and rip currents. Ouch. Plunging nightly rates. Until some brainiac figured it would be a good idea to build the world's largest swimming pool mere feet from the ocean. Turns out, it was a good idea. This massive saltwater swimming pool remains a constant 79 degrees. No tides, sharks, or stingrays to ruin the day either. How big is big? Try half a mile long and hold 66 million gallons of water. It looks more like a lake. Add in a white sand perimeter, palm trees, and docks for sailors to ply their hobby. You heard correctly, sailing in the pool. And if you get a wild urge to experience Mother Nature's version of water, it's only a few steps to the real deal. We're betting you'll be back in the pool before long. How's that for a jolt to your usual beach travels? For more, visit jetsettershow.com. For the Jet Setter Blogcast, I'm Will Weeks.
Thanks for listening to this audio blog, and please see disclaimers and important information at the website.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, the station to help you reach your dream destination.
Va subiendo la corriente. Chinchorro y atarraya, la canoa de Bareque, para llegar a la playa.
And we're back. We're here with Tony Clark, a Scot who's set up shop in Popayán, way down in the south of Colombia, with his wife, Kim McPhee, another Scot as well. We've been talking about their hostels and their plans and their projects, an incredibly successful venture, and the fact that they've been, you know, really taken in by this community. I mean, it's not a small issue, you know, to up sticks and live in another part of the world, not least in Colombia, and not least way down in Popayán, you know. And so Tony's explained to us, we've been talking a little bit about the problems of restoring a colonial house, about which we are both experts now. Tony, aside from the Hostel Trail website, and aside from the two hostels, you've also got an off-grid house there in Popayán.
That's right, yeah. We started this project around about two and a half years back. And the idea was to try and build something of a model house that could be copied throughout Colombia, which is completely self-sufficient, completely off-grid. One of the reasons why you can do these things in Colombia is because we're pretty much on the equator. So what you have all year round daylight. There's no winter that you would experience in North America or Northern Europe. You have rainy seasons, you have rains. In terms of the light, it's pretty much the same all year round. So based on the fact that we knew that the sun would rise at 6 a.m. every morning and the sun would set at 6 p.m. every evening, we set about designing and building a big off-grid house. And we finally finished probably around about 6 months ago. So a lot of mistakes, but now we pretty much have the house up and running and completely finished.
I mean, explain to me, off-grid. I mean, I used to work for a number of environmental NGO, but you do not use electricity from the mains, water from the mains, gas. I mean, how does this run?
I think there's two elements. You need electricity, you need water. So, talking about the water, first of all,
okay.
We harvest rainwater. So we have special Ribeiro, which is in, which is available in Colombia, but it's a French material, and it's actually made from recycled fibers from construction and various different things. It's one of the only materials being approved by the World Health Organization for harvesting rainwater and drinking water. So what we do is we have a collection system which basically gathers all the water from the roof and passes it through a number of different filters which serve to clean the roof, and then in 7,000 litre tanks. After that, we have certain flow switches built into the tanks. These flow switches detect the different water levels and automatically pump the water around the house to the different systems that we need, whether it be the toilets or the kitchen or the washing machine, whatever. And then for the drinking water, we pass the same water that we collect from the roof through ceramic filters and activated carbon as well. So pretty much you can do absolutely everything in terms of water in the house. The second element is the electricity. We have 435 watt solar panels on top of the house, and they charge up two very large deep cycle batteries, which are built into the extension itself. And then most of the lighting is pretty standard, a mixture of LED lighting and your standard energy bulbs. And then we have a specially converted fridge, which we use, well, it's actually a freezer that's being converted to run the fridge, which is much more novel in terms of energy consumption. So basically, the operating house is just a combination of lots and lots of different elements, which means that we don't need a connection to electricity or a connection to the water. And on top of that, when we set about designing this house, we didn't really want to create a house that looked like one of these mixed match kind of hippie kind of things. We wanted to create something that looked very classic. So we built a colonial style house, and all of the systems were hidden away. In addition to the solar panels and the rainwater tasking, we also use solar water heaters as well, so we can get piping hot showers without the use of gas or electricity as well. So we've been living in the house, even though the house hasn't been finished, we've been living in the house since April of last year. So that means we've been surviving for pretty much a year and a half completely disconnected from the electricity and the water grid.
So I know where to go, and I'm in Popayan, and the mains electricity fails. I know where to go.
I know, it's quite funny actually, because sometimes we come home from work, because the house is just outside the centre of Popayan, and the power cut in the whole of that section, it's not really very often to get these power cuts. The energy is not quite stable to be elsewhere. And then if we drive through this black, dark, and then you just come home to your house, turn on the lights, and no problem whatsoever. So, yeah, I think that one really is kind of worth it. And when you look at the bills you get at the end of every month, you realize you're not paying a water or an electricity bill. So.
I think it's absolutely admirable, the work you're doing down there in terms of that. And I don't know where you get a hold of your solar panels and things, because this is something I've been looking into, but importing them has been, it's just ridiculously expensive. So I hope you have the inside route.
We'll have a talk about it another time. Yeah, we definitely will. We'll invite anyone who's kind of interested. Just to give us a shout, because, we're not trying to hide the information. In fact, we try to publish it as much as possible and try and help people who are trying to do similar things. People have been getting in touch with different parts of not only Colombia, but other parts of Latin America as well, just some information about the different systems we use. So, but the technology, the price is coming down a lot. Every single month you can see the drop in price in solar panels, and every single month you can also see the cost of the electricity and the water rising. So I think we're going to reach a point where it's just going to really take off this kind of alternative technology.
Well, of course, and it's completely designed for countries like Colombia. You're even closer to the equator than us up here, but equally, so much sunlight all day round, plenty of rainfall because of the
tail
end and stuff. And do you, Liz, I have to ask you, you built this house, you designed it. What background do you come from to be able to know all of this sort of engineering?
Well, when I did computing and artificial intelligence, which I suppose in its essence is really a big problem solving. And so I'm a big believer in the kind of divide and conquer kind of mentality. You take a task and you divide it into managed chunks, and you just set about trying to work out how to evaluate and how to solve each problem in turn. So when you look at a big problem, so if someone says to you, Richard, tomorrow build me an office house, or build me a, or start a hostel, you know, it would just seem too much. Where you sit down with a piece of paper and you try and work out all those steps you need to do to reach your goal, it doesn't become a lot more natural. And I think that's the essence of this operative house, that it sounds a lot very impressive, but it's just lots and lots of very, very simple steps and very, very simple features all matched together to create one final product.
Yeah, I think what you're doing, I mean, you could teach some vital lessons to a great number of people then, you know, about with this policy that you have. And did you take on volunteers to help you to build the house?
No, not at all, actually. We didn't really take on any volunteers whatsoever. We spent a lot of time researching. Obviously, the construction process takes quite a long time. So when you're in stage one of the construction, you're thinking about stage three on the off-grid kind of systems. And we liaised quite a lot with different universities, and we were also sharing ideas. We had some people come over from the University of Halmstad in Sweden, some alternative energy students. So we were working together and helping them with some projects, and they were giving us some tips and advice about how we could do things as well. So it was really just basically a lot of sharing of ideas of different people who are interested in the kind of technologies. So yeah, I mean, I can't claim all the credit for it, you know, Kim can't claim all the credit either, but I think we did try and involve quite a lot of people in the actual process itself, and so I think everyone had a little bit of a hand in getting this house up and running.
Well, for those of you who have just tuned in, this is Columbia Calling on the Overseas Radio Network, and we're talking to Tony Scott, who's down, not Tony Scott, that's the director, but Tony Clark, down there in Popayan, in southern Colombia, where he's been incredibly successful with his partner, Kim McPhee, and we've been talking just now about his off-grid house, the first off-grid house in the region down there, and many people are interested in this, and that I, for one, want to imitate some of these practices. It's just getting started, you know.
Well, the first step is always the hardest, isn't it, Richard? I think once you've got the goal, I think it's a lot easier to get moving. And it's also very rewarding. Certainly, I think one of the nicest projects we've done is this off house, because it's something we try to involve people in. We try and share the ideas with the students. Come visit it, and I say it's a kind of a field thing, because you know it should be the future. You know, in countries like Colombia, with these kind of climatic conditions, more people should be making the most of the natural resources.
And of course, there's what Colombia has in droves is of natural resources. Like, Tony, between the hostel trail hostels, two of them, but between the website, between the off-grid home, and of course, we'll go into the bike sharing scheme as well in a minute. But do you take any time off?
Well, I think you're very good at making it sound a lot more impressive than we actually are. We lead fairly boring lives, to be honest. Thank you. It's very impressive when we talk about it on the radio, but yeah, I mean, really what we do is most days we wake up about 6:30, we come down to work. We work from about 8 o'clock until 1 o'clock or about 2 o'clock, and then from then on we've got time to do little errands and work on a few projects, have a coffee, maybe a friend, center of town. So really we've got quite a flexible timetable. And most of the projects tend to kind of run themselves these days. I have loyally, most of our staff have been with us for 3 or 4 years at least. And so we're perfectly happy to leave things in their hands and we trust them with everything. So it gives us quite a good quality of life. Because at the end of the day, Colombia is a fantastic country, but you really got to enjoy it. You've got to take time off, you've got to enjoy the coffee shops, you've got to enjoy the restaurants, and you will.
Absolutely true what you're saying is absolutely true. I'm gonna interrupt you there or something, but because we're gonna have to take a little break. But this is Columbia Calling, talking to Tony Clark here on the Overseas Radio Network, and we'll be right back. Thank you.
bla bla.
Your expatriation destination. This is OverseasRadio.com.
You've decided that you want to move overseas for that quality of life experience you've always dreamed of. But you don't want to give up the best of back home. We agree. Things like high-speed internet, safe neighborhoods where you can stroll along a shaded sidewalk, a place where you know your neighbors and you have friends close by. These are important. Grand Pacifica Beach and Golf Resort gives you the best comforts of back home paired with the exceptional lifestyle only available south of the border. Imagine strolling along over 3 miles of secluded beach, playing a round of golf along the ocean, surfing a world-class break all to yourself, enjoying a fine meal on your balcony and toasting to another spectacular sunset. All this and more can be yours only an hour from Managua. Complete home and lot packages start under $100,000, and a nice home on the golf course is yours for the mid-twos. Come visit for a weekend and enjoy our oceanside golf course. Ride horseback on the beach, meet your future neighbors, and make some new friends. Grand Pacifica may be a place you'd like to call home. For more information, email Mike at MikesGringoLife.com. That's Mike at MikesGringoLife.com.
Worried about rising taxes, costly insurance, out-of-control health care, economic decline, staggering debt, mortgages, and retirement? It doesn't have to be this way. Escape to Ecuador, one of the most beautiful countries on the planet, and at EcuadorAtYourService.com, be your guide. Ecuador has been named the number one retirement destination in the world 3 times in a row. So if you're searching for beaches, jungles, farmland, cities, affordable health care, and a richer lifestyle at half the cost, contact EcuadorAtYourService.com.
Have you always dreamed of living abroad, but you are afraid it might be difficult? JustLanded.com helps you make the move. The free information on JustLanded.com helps you get a job, find a house, and a good school for your children. You can also meet other expats in our online community. Visit www.JustLanded.com and find out how easy it is to live your dream abroad. That's JustLanded.com.
Sit back and relax. You are tuned into the Overseas Radio Network.
Va subiendo la corriente con chinchorro y atarraya, la canoa de Bareque para llegar.
And we're back again with Tony Clark, a Scot living down there in Popayán. We've been talking about his off-grid house most recently. Of course, he's the owner of hosteltrail.com. Look it up if you're traveling to South America or Central America. He's got two hostels down there in Popayán, a town that I've yet to visit in my 7 years here, but I will get there one day. Tony, you're so busy. We've been talking about that. You've been talking about, but I mean, what you've mainly been talking about is a change in a quality of life. I mean, you're enjoying the coffee shops, you're enjoying the restaurants and stuff. But one thing you also mentioned is that you've got a bike lending scheme, which has to be pretty revolutionary down there.
Well, it is, yeah. I mean, we pretty much started with the whole bike theme in 2009, so pretty much a couple of years after we started the hostel trail. And what we did was we bought 6 mountain bikes and we started running tours up into the mountains in the Andes. So we drove up to about 2,400 metres, dropped them at some thermal springs, some natural thermal springs, and left them to it really. And the idea was that they could breathe in the thermal springs and then they could ride back to Popayán, which is pretty much a 50-kilometer ride to an indigenous reserve. The active volcano, Volcán Pura Sake, and coming right back into the historic centre of Popayán. And this tour, since November 2009, we've already sent over 1,200 kilometres tour, with 380 departures. So we realised there was a lot of potential for cycle-related activities in Popayán and surrounding areas. So the first thing we did was we built slightly off topic, we built Popayán's first luxury rickshaw, or pedicab as they call them in the States.
Okay.
Which you've probably seen the public now. You've got public transport system, and then often in the stations, you have little rickshaws to people up and they take them from their last station to their house.
Yeah, we got this in London as well, no? And
that's right, yeah, you have actually, yeah, London's right on that thing. So we wanted to do this a similar kind of thing, but make it a little bit more elegant. So, again, we set about designing a rickshaw, and it took us about 6 months to put it together, and then we used it to transport people around this, for example, Popayán. And also to advertise local businesses. So this was the start of a project which was called Eco Seedflow. Now, the idea was basically to have a whole suite of these rickshaws going around the colonial town, colonial city of Pompeii, in a way to try and remove a lot of the traffic and a lot of congestion in the actual city itself. But for one reason or another, that project didn't seem to take off. It didn't want to go around in the rickshaw. I'm still to work out why it didn't work, but perfectly comfortable in saying that it was a bit of a flop. So I told you, no, our projects are successful. We do have a few disasters in our repertoire. So what we did was we took the Eco-People project and decided that it would be much better as a bike share system or a bike rental scheme, similar to Boris's bike scheme in London or the Park bike share or the Deco bike in Miami or the City bike in New York. And the idea is that you have a bicycle available for the users of the city. So we designed a bike which was loosely modeled on a Scottish bike called the Paper Bicycle. And we finished using the design and we put together the bike using recycled materials from construction or whatnot. So we built a fleet of six bikes. We got a few companies to sponsor the bikes. We built a docking station. We built the online system, the Facebook and social networking kind of volcano with that as well. And so far, we have about 100 people registered to along with the hostel and just basically pull the bike out with a member card and use it to do their errand in the center of the hostel. So, yeah, the idea is to keep expanding this project, stations in different parts of the city, and yeah, just basically increase this whole project.
It's amazing. I mean, it's absolutely revolutionary. Imagine how long they've been trying to implement this in London, in England, you know, the Boris bikes, and you've just gone ahead and done it in Popayan in the south of Colombia. I mean, it's pretty, you have to say, and the fact that you went out and designed bicycles and you went up and just altered things to make it, I mean, this is resourceful behavior.
Well, I have to say, it wouldn't be possible without the ingenuity of the Colombians themselves. You'll know yourself, this is really a culture that everything is possible. Nothing is really broken, and nothing's ever really, really broken. Everything can be fixed, and anything can be built, and anything can be modified.
Well, they're all...
It's a lot of these basic elements that we've lost, certainly in Europe and North America, and they've managed to hold on to this kind of element in Colombia. Yeah.
This is true. It's kind of like it's a MacGyver culture, you know, if you remember
definitely,
that 80s show.
that's the best way to say it. Definitely a MacGyver.
No.
It amazes me how they just fix things and build them, weld things, and, you know, the health and safety sometimes helps us out a little bit after that. The fact that, you know, you can weld something, you know, in a residential, you know, while you're sitting on your sofa. I mean, all that kind of thing.
I like that your enthusiasm. of course, health and safety doesn't exist. I think it would be a disaster if it came here because
I know it would completely change the culture together.
And we wouldn't be able to get across the river in Mompos.
I know, you're right. Yeah, there's a lot of these things that being, you know, yeah. So definitely.
No, I wanted to talk to you sort of hotel owner to hotel owner. It's something that's it's been on my mind, and I think it's probably something you can talk about with quite great aplomb, is that, you know, the evil days of TripAdvisor are upon us. You're already, but we're, you know, now that TripAdvisor and people have started to discover Colombia, you know,
right.
We're out there. I mean, I've had people turn up and say in Mompos, you know, if you give us a discount, we'll give you a great review. And I've just basically told them that we're full. Have you encountered anything like that down there in Popayan?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough whole question in general about TripAdvisor, isn't it? It's completely, it's given the power back to the people, back to the client. And although, you know, that's a great thing, and it's fantastic, and it should be doing push up standards. As a hotel owner, I know you're in the same position. It gives a little bit too much power for some people, and really allows people to meet you. And It's basically blackmail in some situations, and it's much stricter advice. This is general, you know, I can make a comment that can really ruin you. So it's a very, very difficult thing with supervisor. I mean, really, it's a double-edged sword, really, isn't it? Because on one hand, you really need these online publications. You really need pages like TripAdvisor to get people to places like Pop Band, get people to Bogotá, Mompox. But every now and then you get someone who knows how to play the system, and that really messes things up.
Yeah. Well, I tend to think that, you know, I just think that I know that these reviews should be subjective, and I'll talk about a personal experience that happened, well, I guess a couple of weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. So, well, 2 or 3 weeks ago, we got a dreadful review. I mean, you could imagine everything negative that this person, I don't even know he or she, could have written about us. They wrote negative, and I scoured through our reservation books, our emails, phone records, because everything's logged, everything's noted, and I couldn't find this person. Mm-hmm. And then I reread the review, and I saw, you know, a promotion for, you know, basically they'd praised another hotel in the review, and I thought, well, that's gonna be false. So I got in touch with TripAdvisor, and fortunately, within a few hours, they'd taken it down, and not too much damage was done. And then I checked back a week later, and the same people have put another one up, but slightly tamer, so therefore it can't get taken down, but more or less to the same extent. You're just like, how can people be so cruel, you know?
It's ridiculous, you know. It's incredible. It causes heartache. I know that you've done a lot of travel writing and things like that. You've gone and you visited hotels. And
yeah.
It's tough because a lot of people lose faith what we're trying to do here. You, for example, are a pioneer in Montauk, and you started the first backpacker hostel there, and you're really doing a lot of work to bring people there. And, really, your closest ally should be the other hotels, shouldn't they? I mean,
Yeah. You're
the one promoting the actual destination. You're the one trying to bring people in. And on the occasions that you're full, you're overflowing with someone else. And then younger people might read a lot of your information and choose to stay in another hotel. So little by little, these other places will start to reap the rewards of you doing so much work. But we're still living in the era where, you know, we have owners and enemies of other hotel owners, and now it's the perfect channel to actually cause damage to the competition. I mean, I'm very really fortunate in that, as of yet, touch wood, that the hotels haven't become involved in that kind of thing offhand, but I've heard this story many a time, and so I completely understand where you're coming from.
It's an interesting situation because it's like, what bothers me is that they just sort of discovered the internet. Can't
power.
We use it for good?
That's right. It's exactly that kind of thing, isn't it? You know.
Right.
I get very worked up about TripAdvisor every now and then because I just want people to try and understand. You know, we're all trying to do. This is a country where 15 years ago people didn't even want to come here. You know, and what we've managed to do, you know, you're exactly what things have come. We've started this and we've created the infrastructure that allows people to come and see places like Montauk, places like Popayán. And there are certain websites that now give people the opportunity to comment on how good it was full on the top of their cappuccino. So it just seems a little bit ridiculous that we've dedicated ourselves so much to making sure people have a safe and comfortable trip that people are focusing on the very, very small details. And it just seems a little bit ridiculous sometimes, doesn't it?
It does, and it holds us all over the barrel. But, I mean, at the same time, it does force us to keep updating and keep improving our situation. But also, you know, constructive criticism is one thing, and downright, attacks and envy is another thing altogether. Listen, Tony, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. I mean, I know that the connection hasn't been so great between Bogota here, which is the connection's not great here in Bogota and there in Popayán, and finally getting to talk to you and hear about your project has been a real revelation, and I thank you for that. So for anyone considering going down to the south of Colombia, how many hours is Popayán from Cali?
From Cali, it's about 2.5-3 hours from the daily you go. And it's about 12 hours from Bogotá and 12 hours from Medellín. I mean, there's daily flights as well.
Yeah,
Bogotá.
And the flights aren't long either. I mean, it's not...
No, that's an hour and a half or so, I think.
So, I mean, It's eminently visitable, and so if you want to come down to Popayan in the south, an hour and a half from Bogota by air, 12 hours by road, or just 2 hours, 2.5 hours from Cali, a big city down in the south there, check out the website, hosteltrail.com, very good information, and you'll probably find yourself, you know, on the bike lending scheme if you go down there, because, you know, I couldn't think of a better way of spending some time in a small, in a lovely colonial town.
Yeah, well, as I say, everyone's welcome there. And I'd say I very much hope that I see you down here. But I haven't been to Mompox. You're not the only one to blame. So I'll have a list of places to visit.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Tony. This is Columbia Calling. I'm your host, Richard McCall. We've been talking to Tony Clark of the Hostel Trail Hostels, and I hope you've enjoyed the show. We apologize for the connectivity problems, but such is life. And so please tune back in and listen to next week as well.
Live call-in shows and hosts from your favorite countries. This is the Overseas Radio Network.